This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It's almost as scary as watching your dog growl at the wall and realize he sees something you don't. Get a quote at geico.com.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Early voting momentum. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Wednesday, October 28. Thanks for joining us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Americans have already cast half the total votes counted in 2016 thanks to early voting. Meanwhile, hear how President Trump and Joe Biden are making final pitches.
Authorities in Philadelphia say 1,000 looters were targeting shops like pharmacies and shoe stores after a fatal shooting by police.
Spikes in coronavirus cases are leading to government crackdowns in states like Wisconsin and Illinois.
And how Americans have a new approach to tipping restaurant servers during the pandemic restrictions.
A quarter of people between 18 and 34, and those 35 to 44 tip less often than they used to, as opposed to older folks, 45 to 54, they're saying 14%. The folks that are 55 to 64% are saying 14%, and 65 and older are saying 12%.
Zlati Meyer at Fast Company on the percentage of Americans who are shorting waitstaff at restaurants these days. The final days on the campaign trail show Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden trying to make inroads in a handful of Republican-leaning states, while President Trump is trying to shore up states he won 4 years ago. Mr. Biden yesterday traveled to Georgia, a state that has voted for the GOP nominee in every presidential election since 1992.
Donald Trump has waved the white flag. Abandon our families and surrender to this virus.
Later in the week, Mr. Biden stops in Iowa, which Mr. Trump won easily in 2016. Mr. Trump, meanwhile, is traveling this week to at least five states he won in 2016. After rallies in Pennsylvania Monday, he was in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Nebraska yesterday.
The vaccines, which are coming immediately, even without, we're turning that corner. You know, at some point, we're turning that corner. And it's been pretty amazing.
On a related note, the Texas Supreme Court has ruled that the governor may limit drop-off sites for election ballots in a political win for President Trump days before next Tuesday's election. A second straight night of chaos in Philadelphia, where authorities say about 1,000 people were looting businesses in response to a deadly police shooting Monday. Police had arrested 91 people late Monday and early yesterday, most in connection with looting of pharmacies, shoe stores, and other retail outlets. Police said 30 cops were injured, mostly from hurled bricks and other projectiles, and a sergeant's leg was broken when she was hit by a pickup truck. The civil unrest developed after video showing police fatally shooting Walter Wallace Jr., a black man holding a knife who approached the officers from between parked cars. Mr. Wallace's father called for calm.
And I don't condone no violence, tearing up the city, looting the stores, and all this chaos going.
Shaka Johnson, a lawyer for the Wallace family, said the 27-year-old Mr. Wallace had mental health problems and was taking lithium under a doctor's care. He was a father of nine. The attorney also said police had been called to the Wallace home twice earlier in the day. Nearly 500,000 people have contracted COVID-19 in the U.S. over the last 7 days, according to a tally by Reuters, as new cases and hospitalizations set records in the Midwest. Coronavirus hotspots include Illinois, which reported 31,000 new infections over the past week, and two states expected to be key in the presidential election, Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. Wisconsin broke one-day state records in both cases and deaths. State officials told residents to stay home, wear masks, and cancel social gatherings. White House coronavirus coordinator Deborah Birx called out North Dakota, saying it needs to do more.
We were in your grocery stores and in your restaurants and, frankly, even in your hotels. This is the least use of masks that we have seen in retail establishments of any place we have been.
Elsewhere, Alaska set a statewide record for single-day positive tests over the weekend. Analysis by Reuters showed hospitalizations rising 13% nationwide. 11 minutes after the hour, on This Morning, America's First News. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday. The numbers back it up. President Trump is beating Joe Biden in number of events and campaign schedule pace during their critical final weeks of the election. Emily Larson, political reporter at the Washington Examiner, has looked at the schedules side by side. Emily, what did you find?
Despite Trump being taken off the campaign trail for about a week and a half due to his coronavirus diagnosis, Trump is leading Biden in those number of days. So he's traveled for 35 days, while Biden has traveled for 27. He traveled to 49 metropolitan areas, while Biden traveled to 34. And he's been to 13 battleground states, while Biden has been to 9. And this is from the start of September through October 26th.
Wow.
So good 2-month period, and Trump has outpaced Biden, who has gotten a reputation for having a pretty leisurely campaign schedule even in the final weeks of the election.
Right. It looks like it paid off in 2016 for the president. Any feel for whether or not this hectic pace will pay off in 2020?
Well, it's sort of an interesting question, because this is a big gamble for the Biden campaign. They're betting that because of coronavirus and the difficulty that people have in going to large groups and their base's feelings about that, their voters don't really want to necessarily have these big events. And so that's a big bet that they've made. And that's also what makes it very different from 2016. But Hillary Clinton did get a lot of negative attention for her not going to Wisconsin, not campaigning in Wisconsin, not going to as many states as Trump did. And so that is often cited as something that might have helped tip Trump over the edge in those final days. Not sure if that's going to be the same dynamic this time, but it's definitely the thought that Biden does have a more leisurely campaign schedule that's backed up by those numbers.
We're speaking with Emily Larson, political reporter at the Washington Examiner. Her piece is called Trump Outpacing Biden in Travel and Events During Final Weeks of Election. What about the idea that because of kind of this seemingly lack of enthusiasm for Mr. Biden, they're concerned that by holding an event, not a lot of people would show up?
Yeah, well, I will say that people are showing up to his events. There are people who are showing up. They limit the number of people who can go in, and they don't even give tickets out for public access. I think they're choosing like their most loyal supporters to go in these small groups in order to not expose anyone to coronavirus. But even at his events, there are usually people outside, people who might have heard about the event from the local Democratic Party and couldn't get in, outside waving flags. And then you will have Trump counter-protesters outside waving flags as well. So, there is a hunger, I think, for his supporters to have more in-person events. And, I was in Florida a couple weeks ago, and one of the things that the Biden campaign has been trying to do is have socially distanced events. Like, they'll have a car parade. So it's like a kind of a parade of cars or a caravan, and they will put signs on it. Mm-hmm. And one Democratic leader said that was a really good thing to have after months and months of no on-the-ground activity, no seeing other supporters, and it really boosted morale. So in that sense, I think it is important, especially for the most loyal supporters for these campaigns, to have events in order to energize them.
Thanks, Emily. Emily Larson, political reporter at the Washington Examiner. 20 minutes after the hour on this morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Nearly 500,000 people have contracted COVID-19 in the U.S. over the last 7 days as new cases and hospitalizations set records in the Midwest. Coronavirus hotspots include Illinois, which reported 31,000 new infections over the past week, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker says he must institute a capacity cap on gatherings and end indoor dining.
The situation here in all of Cook County city and suburbs alike, is bad, and it's getting worse.
Wisconsin broke one-day state records in both cases and deaths. Nationwide, more than 5,600 people died from the virus in the last week, with hospitalizations up 13%.
Number two.
Americans have already cast half the total votes counted in 2016 as voters show enthusiasm and take precautions against the pandemic. 69.5 million early votes have been cast as of yesterday afternoon, 50.4% of the total turnout from 2016. That includes 46 million votes cast by mail-in ballots and 23 million in-person votes.
Number three.
Louisiana is bracing for what's expected to be its third hurricane strike this year. Zeta is expected to hit south of New Orleans this evening. Governor John Bel Edwards.
No one should be complacent because it's late October, and it certainly feels like hurricane season should be behind us, because historically speaking, we don't typically get them this late in the year. But hurricane season is not over.
New Orleans has been housing evacuees from earlier storms that hit the state, and many of the evacuees are on edge.
The Bets. High fly ball left center. Back at the wall, and it's gone!
Joe Buck with a call on Fox as the Dodgers went on to capture the World Series title, beating the Tampa Bay Rays 3-1 in Game 6 last night, giving the Dodgers their first title since 1988. But because it's 2020, not all the news was good. Justin Turner of the Dodgers was pulled from the game after registering Major League Baseball's first positive COVID test in 59 days. But he returned to the field about an hour after the game, posing for a team photo with his face mask pulled down. Meanwhile, the Dodgers' Game 3 win over the Rays was the least watched World Series game ever, beating the record set 2 days earlier in Game 2.
Wow. Well, some questionable decision-making there, it sounds like, after the game.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jen. 22 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Today, I'm here with Josh Hunt, Executive Vice President and Chief Business Development Officer at MEDC, the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Josh, what are Michigan's best selling points?
The biggest selling point for Michigan is our pure Michigan quality of life. We also have a diverse and abundant workforce and a business-friendly environment that we think is unmatched. It's also very connected to global supply chain assets. And through a comprehensive suite of programs and services, we can help businesses grow here in this state, and also help provide access to our highly skilled workforce, where we have the highest concentration of engineers and some of the greatest skilled trades talent as well. Here in Michigan, we make things, and we think we can be the convergence of technology and manufacturing, and there is no better place to bring your idea or product from concept to reality than here in Michigan.
To hear more of this interview with Josh Hunt from MEDC, go to thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. A new poll finds that nearly 1 in 5 Americans are tipping less these days when we eat at restaurants. It's another pandemic trend from Zlati Meyer, staff writer at Fast Company. Zlati, give us some findings.
Approximately 19% of Americans, so we're talking 1 in 5 Americans, say they tip less than they did before COVID-19. Who are the better tippers? Who are the worst tippers during this unusual times that we live in? Also depends on age. A quarter of people between 18 and 34, and those 35 to 44 tip less often than they used to, as opposed to older folks, 45 to 54, they're saying 14%. The folks that are 55 to 64% are saying 14%, and 65 and older are saying 12%. So we're really seeing a change. And this, of course, is for sit-down service.
It's interesting because a lot of times the stories that make news are these wildly generous tips at certain restaurants, you know, that bring the wait staff to tears by folks who are just trying to do something. What is the reason that some folks give, Zlati, for tipping less these days?
Well, one of the key things that people are saying is that they are having some economic hard times, whether that means they've lost their job or they feel that their job is at stake, or perhaps their partner's job. So they're saying, I can't afford to tip. And of course, waiters and waitresses say, well, if you can afford to eat out, you should be able to afford to tip. Tipping is part of that price that you pay when you go to your local restaurant. You have to remember also, Gordon, that in numerous states around the country, restaurateurs can get away with paying wait staff less than $3 an hour, which, of course, we know is way less than minimum wage. Why is that? Because it's understood that tips will make up the difference. So yeah. If a person is tipped appropriately, they will, in fact, hit minimum wage. And, of course, the best waiters and waitresses among them really tend to rake it in. But you're right. You would hear stories of not only celebrities, but even just regular people leaving these astronomical tips, saying good job, leaving a little inspirational note on the credit card check. And it seems like that really is not happening so much anymore. There are some people that are tipping a little bit more because they do feel bad for these food workers who are considered frontline workers, and they want to reimburse them for essentially putting themselves at risk. Yeah. You have to remember, unlike other professions, when that waiter or waitress approaches the table, chances are the person's mask is down, not because they don't believe in masks, but because they were just, you know, eating their pasta or mm-hmm. you know, finishing up their dessert. So it really is risky in ways we don't even think about.
We're speaking with Lottie Meyer, staff writer at Fast Company. She's written a piece entitled "The Ugly Truth About Tipping Waitstaff During COVID-19. Somebody was explaining, too, in your story, there's that social environment is being taken away in some cases, I guess, because of masks and stuff. So maybe we don't feel the same connection to the waitstaff.
Exactly. I mean, tipping is a societal norm, right? I mean, we all do it. Some people give 15%, some people give 25%. Few people perhaps give none, but there is this sort of unspoken societal pressure, and studies have shown, for example, that when a server is watching you pay, let's say on an iPad, it sometimes makes you feel like you're being forced to leave yeah. that gratuity. In addition, people who go, let's say, a party of four with your in-laws or coworkers, the person who tips does a big, you know, with a flourish, they present the credit card, and they sort of want that recognition. Oh, I'm so generous. Neither of those exists, right? We don't have those group eating out experiences really anymore, and that's really not that societal pressure is taken away, and that also perhaps is leading to people leaving less of a tip.
Thanks, Lottie. Lottie Meyer, staff writer at Fast Company. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. So if you're working from home, are you still dressing for work? While we can all understand not wearing a tie, going to the other extreme, like an old t-shirt, is a little too casual. If you need to upgrade the work-from-home wardrobe, try Cuts Clothing. Technical apparel for the sport of business. GQ called them the only shirt worth wearing. They combine an athletic, tailored-looking fit with their custom-engineered, wrinkle-free, ultra-soft Pika fabric for a new level of fit, fabric, and function. I gotta say, I love wearing my cut shirts. They're tough, they're durable, yet still flexible, willing to move with me. And now, Cuts is finally out with their new polos and hoodies made with their custom Hyperloop French Terry fabric. Try Cuts and save. Cuts is loved by your favorite athletes, entrepreneurs, and even podcast hosts. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. cutsclothing.com/Gordon.
We are America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us, and welcome into Wednesday, October 28. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Second night of unrest in Philadelphia after a fatal police shooting. More than 100,000 evacuations from Southern California wildfires. Hurricane Zeta targeting the Gulf Coast this afternoon. Wisconsin and Illinois wrestle spikes in coronavirus cases. Executives from social media companies face a Senate committee today about content decisions. Dodgers win their first World Series in 32 years. And the Texas man lifting neighborhood spirits with his Halloween display. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, from the corridors of Washington to the cobblestones of Paris, the coronavirus is roaring back and authorities are ramping up restrictions again. This time around, however, everyone is tired. The collective exhaustion known as pandemic fatigue has emerged as a formidable adversary for governments trying to control the virus. More from Stacey Miketree, bureau chief for the Wall Street Journal in Paris. Stacey, explain.
Well, you know, we're 7 months into the pandemic, and, you know, worldwide, if you look at any of the sort of indicators of how people are behaving, whether they're keeping up with the various rules that have been rolled out in different countries, the restrictions, what these surveys show is that over time, You know, people are keeping up with the individual measures like wearing masks and washing your hands. But when the rules run up against, you know, the need for social contact, when it comes to socializing in groups, the rules tend to get relaxed or they even go out the door. And this is a problem long term for many governments, which are now, you know, ramping up restrictions and really counting on a high degree of public cooperation in order for the, you know, restrictions to work and bring the numbers down.
As you found in the story, some folks have just reached their breaking point.
Exactly. You know, we found case after case of people who had been pretty stringent over the first 7 months. And, you know, sometime, you know, earlier this month, they just sort of snapped and decided, you know, after months of, you know, airing out all packaged goods and wiping down elevator buttons. And we had even one case of someone who regularly microwaves the newspaper. You know, these people suddenly realize, oh, I can't take it anymore. And they're booking trips to go see grandpa. They're, you know, visiting theme parks. And this breakdown in discipline is happening, you know, the experts would say at the worst possible time, right? The health authorities are saying that now instead we need to be once again clamping down, and instead we find that people have sort of reached their limit in terms of what they're willing to endure.
We're speaking with Stacey Miketry, Paris bureau chief for The Wall Street Journal. He's written a piece entitled "Pandemic Fatigue is Real and It's Spreading." I presume there's no playbook to go by here for when folks reach their breaking point, but what can the approach be?
Well, you know, if you talk to, you know, authorities on either side of the Atlantic, what they'll tell you is that they've been trying to find this balance between, you know, the making of new rules and trying to gauge to what extent the public is willing to accept them. And this is sort of where the fatigue gets compounded, because, you know, every time a new rule is made, it's another thing that you have to think about and going about your daily business,
yeah.
Right? And if the public grows tired and they let down their guard, well, then that triggers more infections and more rules. So it becomes a sort of vicious cycle in which, you know, rules are being piled on top of rules, and the public starts to feel like there's really no exit, or, you know, it doesn't really matter whether they're complying or they're not. In some cases, you know, public health authorities were telling us that it's hard for the public to even really know what the status quo is, because there's been so many policy reversals. So it's a real challenge just sort of keeping up in general.
What are things like for you right now, day to day in Paris?
Yeah, well, in Paris, you know, it's been recently authorities decided to cut the quarantine times in half from 14 days to 7. And, you know, the rationale here was that the public is more likely to comply if the quarantine times are shorter. And while that makes perfect sense, you know, there's a pretty lively debate as to whether or not it's actually safer epidemiologically speaking to have a shorter quarantine period. So again, you have politicians sort of playing this behavioral science game, trying to anticipate how the public's likely to react to the latest policy. And it's really hard to know at this point how effective it all is.
Thanks, Stacey. Stacey Miketry, bureau chief for The Wall Street Journal, with us today from Paris. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Wednesday. It is time now for the mic drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, you know that old saying, one man's trash is another man's treasure. In this case, one man's yard work is another man's centerpiece. That's the hope of a grocery store in San Francisco who is selling paper-wrapped bundles of organic leaves for only $14.95 per bouquet. That's according to the New York Post. The organic designation comes because the leaves are pesticide-free and sourced from a local ranch. Vice.com got wind of the leaves for sale and poked fun at the pitch, writing on Twitter that charging $15 for leaves, largely free and widely available in nature, was quite the grift. Commenters, though, were largely positive on the sale, with some calling the idea genius and others reminding them that we've all been shelling out money for bottled water for decades now. So why is this any different?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, look, you can put them up there, but yeah, I'm not going to be buying them.
$15.
You can sell anything you want, or at least try to sell anything you want. Doesn't mean that that $15 wouldn't be better spent someplace else in the grocery store.
It is San Francisco, after all.
Well, right? Yes, that's what some other people said. They're like, look, San Franciscan's going to San Francisco, or what?
That's right.
Something to that effect.
And some of these bottles of water, right? Did you read the ingredients or the origins?
Yes.
Local stream.
Right. Well, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's
If you're lucky, sometimes it's tap water, depending on the, you know, filter. That's tap water, depending on the company.
So my wife is a big believer that in our Keurig coffee machine,
yes,
the water must come from the refrigerator.
Right.
The filtered water directly from the refrigerator.
Yes.
Yeah, guess what I do? Right from the tap.
And she doesn't know the difference.
That's right.
Has
That's
never said
right.
a word.
Never once has she ever said, this coffee tastes funny.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And if you're going to spend time in jail, the least you could hope for is good coffee. At least that's the view of one man who spent the night in custody in a jail in England recently. Upon his release, the man wrote a sarcastic letter and it sent it to the police department, telling them how bad the coffee and food was during his stay, along with a couple of winning scratch-off lottery tickets, which he hoped the department would use to buy some decent coffee. The department posted the note on Facebook and said that they will keep the coffee as bad as it is in the hopes that it will deter the man from visiting the jail again, and instead will donate the money from the lottery tickets to charity.
I mean,
look, that's something I would notice, you know.
I guess.
Not that I've spent a lot of nights in jail, but that's something I would notice if the coffee was bad. But who knows? Maybe that would be a deterrent to not to do whatever it was that got me thrown in jail in the first place.
Something tells me that it's not, and that this is not on an arrestee's checklist of things to look at before committing, you know, such a crime. Or
stop and pause for a moment and think about, you know what, I could go for some coffee, and I bet you theirs is not the highest quality.
Right. Rob the convenience store. Pros, get cash and other items. Cons, bad coffee in jail.
Sure.
Yeah.
I guess not. Just for me.
Mark on your resume.
I'm the only person who would be thinking of that.
13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, visit planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Thanks for spending time with us. This portion of the program is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. I recently spoke with Josh Hunt, their Executive Vice President and Chief Business Development Officer. Check out the interview at thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone. Relocating during COVID-19 while pulling up stakes could come with a substantial pay cut. With the pandemic upending office life, some employees working remotely are contemplating moves from densely packed cities to less costly regions. Moving from the nation's hottest job markets, though, could cost them as much as 30%, according to new research that Glassdoor shared exclusively with USA Today. Glassdoor says where employees clock in will increasingly determine how much they take home. For example, software engineers, software developers, and product managers. Leaving San Francisco could see an average base pay cut of around 23% across the 30 cities that Glassdoor looked at. The average base pay cut for these same roles leaving New York was around 11%. Registered nurses would see their pay decrease the most, nearly 30%, if they left their positions in San Francisco. Marketing managers and sales representatives leaving that city would make nearly 26% less. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The coronavirus is spreading faster than ever in the U.S., with the highest one-week average of new cases since the pandemic began. 38 states are reporting increases in the number of hospitalized patients compared to 2 weeks ago. The situation is especially dire in seven states: Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Texas, where many intensive care units are near or at capacity. Average daily deaths have also edged back up to 800 a day, a level not seen in more than a month.
Number two.
The presidential campaign is shifting west as President Trump campaigns in Arizona today and stages a rally in a town just across the Colorado River from neighboring Nevada. Yesterday, Trump was in Omaha.
Biden wins, he will do bad things. By the way, he's not a good guy, just so you understand.
Number three.
Biden hit the trail in Atlanta.
Everybody knows who Donald Trump is. Let's show him who we are. We choose hope over fear, unity over division, science over fiction, and yes, truth over lies.
Democratic vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris will campaign today in Arizona. The lawyer for the family of a black man killed by Philadelphia police officers in a shooting caught on video says the family had called for an ambulance to get him help with a mental health crisis, not for police intervention. Attorney Shaka Johnson.
We have a person who has mental health issues. We're going to vet those out as the process continues. But we have officers who I think are not properly trained to deal with those mental health issues.
Police say 27-year-old Walter Wallace Jr. was wielding a knife and ignored orders to drop the weapon before officers fired shots Monday afternoon. Last night marked a second night of arrests and widespread looting in parts of the city following the shooting. Online retailers have long used free shipping to encourage customers to buy more products, but a new study suggests free shipping promotions can reduce a company's profit. The Journal of Marketing Research found the free shipping did incentivize customers to buy more, but it also increased purchases of items that historically have higher return rates, such as clothing or products from lesser-known brands. Therefore, returns also increased as a result of promotions to the point where profits were erased.
Oh, that's an interesting deep dive. Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. A man in Austin, Texas, wants to remind his neighbors that magic can still exist. As many parents are looking for ways to make Halloween celebrations safe, Joel Pace has figured a way to carry out a beloved holiday tradition while keeping things socially distant for COVID-19 health and safety purposes. His Halloween tradition goes back to 2015 when Mr. Pace created a Harry Potter-themed decoration on the front porch of his home. Yahoo Life says it's grown into a neighborhood must-see attraction. He initially did it to entertain his wife and son when his wife was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2017. It also now raises money for local charities. During the coronavirus, this year's Hogwarts Experience is no longer an immersive walkthrough with big crowds. Instead, it's a drive-by with a scale model of Hogwarts Castle right in Mr. Pace's front yard. In addition, he decided to keep up the display beyond Halloween and plans to modify the decorations to match upcoming holidays like Thanksgiving and Christmas. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. It's October, and what does that mean? Well, it's Geico-ween, of course. Don't be spooked by high rates on car insurance. Geico is brewing up spellbinding savings that they're crafting just for you. See how much you could save. Get a quote today at geico.com.